Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, and welcome to episode number 109 of the Milestone Pursuit podcast. This is the podcast that brings you a few things. It brings you workouts where I record myself doing a training session and you can download it, plug it in, and run it as if I'm there alongside you. It brings you recovery rambles where I run easy around the beautiful but right now I'm really wet Epping Forest and talk about something that's on my mind. And it brings you conversations with the elites as part of our scheme to invest in underfunded British elite marathon runners. And today, on Monday the 28th of November, that's what we've got. In fact, we've got the third part of our four-part mini-series into how hard it is being a marathoner. And in this episode, we're talking to Charlotte Purdue, who's had a difficult summer. We've had a difficult summer at the World Championships and a difficult time at the London Marathon. So we'll hear from her and we're going to hear all about resilience. But before that, I just wanted to welcome any potential new listeners that are with us today. Any new listeners that might have joined us as a consequence of our appearance in The Guardian last week in the list of the 26, not 25, not 30, the 26 best free and cheap fitness apps, podcasts, downloady things, YouTubey things, what have you. The top 26 that exist in the whole world. It's a pretty niche list. Well, that's okay, because this is a niche podcast. It takes a particular taste to want to listen to a bloke from Epping Forest trudging around, talking to himself. And it might be a bit rustic too in its production quality, although I think it's got better. I don't listen to some of the old ones for fear of shame. That was pretty cool though. There was Adrienne, the yoga maestro, Cassandra, not quite sure how you say that, Joe Wicks, Strava, Nike, and me. They say you're judged by the company you keep. I'm not sure what it says about any of those other people. But thank you to Zoe Williams, who wrote that article, who also kind of gave me the encouragement to keep this thing going in the very beginning, 2.5 years ago, with a review of the mindfulness episode, which is episode 1. Particularly rustic, but all good, from another lifetime ago, April 2020. Came for the mindfulness, stayed for the rambling. The incoherent rambling of a bloke from Epping Forest about insurance scams. I've forgotten about that one. It's still a scam. It's funny how your premiums go up by exactly the same amount for the claim you made the year prior, isn't it? My favourite thing that Zoe says in that little article, it's like having a running buddy, but without having to talk back. That's sort of how I feel too. That I get to talk without being answered back. I can just imagine people disagreeing with me, rather than actually having people disagreeing with me. Which is quite nice in this divisive world that we live in. Anyway, there are more rambles in the pipeline, which we've finished with our four-part mini-series, but for now, let's get into the third part of our four-part mini-series. Let's speak to Charlotte, who is, let's not forget, the the fourth fastest female marathoner in UK history.
So the last time we spoke to Charlotte was in April time, I think, just after she'd come ninth in the Boston Marathon with a 2:25 run. Probably feels like a lifetime ago now. And that was on the back of a 2:23 in London last autumn.
Yeah.
So you were in great shape, looking forward to the World Championships in Eugene and Oregon in July, and then potentially London after that.
Yeah.
But what's happened since then?
A lot of training and not much racing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Oregon obviously didn't go to plan.
Yeah.
Do you want to just let people know sort of what happened? Because I'm not sure everybody fully knows or understands the extent and the story.
Yeah. So training had gone really well. I was in Flagstaff training for 5 weeks before. Felt pretty fit, ready to go. And went to Oregon on the Thursday, and my race was going to be on the Monday.
So you're coming down from altitude as well. So Flagstaff's at altitude. You've had really good training there. Coming down to sea level at Eugene just before the race.
Yep. Well, the protocol for the athletes was to do a COVID test 2 days or 1 day before travel. So I did a COVID test, I think, Tuesday. Obviously, it was negative. Was able to travel, and that was just part of getting your pass to be an athlete. So I arrived in Thursday, negative COVID test, got my pass. All the athletes were in university accommodation, so all the teams in like halls of residence. So GB was like on one floor, like Ireland were on another, Norway was on another, like literally all the countries in one block, so all sharing a lift. And I remember as soon as I walked in, I thought like, oh, this is a COVID nightmare, because just athletes from all over the world. The food hall was like, the food was out. So like jam, for example, was just in a pot, and you could just like take jam out of the pot, and the bread was out and everything. And I just remember thinking like, oh, I hope I don't get COVID. Anyway, went fine. The final few days, did all my easy runs, like felt fine. And then the race on the Monday, I just started running in the race, and I just felt off is all I can describe it as. I just felt I couldn't go with the pace even at 5K. I felt like fatigued and just terrible. Like even the coaching staff that were handing me my bottles said at 5K, they were like, what's wrong with Charlotte? Because I was like off the pack and I was flat out running like a pace which should be easy for me. Yeah. And I just couldn't breathe. Like my chest was so tight. And I just remember thinking like, oh, what's wrong? Like, I think I'll feel better in a minute. I'll just be going through a bad patch. I'll get into it. So I was just telling myself this. I got to 10K, same thing, felt terrible. I was like, okay, I'll feel better at 15K, get to 15K, feel terrible. And then I saw my partner, Adam. He was at 18K, and he like ran alongside me, and he was like cheering for me, obviously trying to be positive, but he could tell that something was wrong. And I just looked at him and I was like, I feel terrible, something's wrong. And then I just like stopped and chatted to him for a while. And I just said to him, like, I can't carry on running for an hour and a bit feeling like this, because I just felt awful. And then, yeah, went back to the athlete area, did a COVID test, a rapid test, and it came back negative. So I was like, oh, that's weird. Like something's definitely not right. I didn't know if it was COVID or not. I then did a PCR test that later that day. And it obviously took like over 24 hours to come back, and actually came back when I was leaving to go home. So the doctor, the GB doctor, had told me that I had to isolate in my room, because he said, you know, your rapid test come back negative, but we think you have COVID, so we don't want you to infect the rest of the team, so can you just isolate in your room? So I wasn't allowed to go in any of the communal areas. I wasn't allowed to go to the dinner place, so I had to have food brought to my room. My roommate Rose Harvey, she also pulled out, but she went to stay with her partner who had an Airbnb, so we were like separated. And then yeah, I was at the airport about to travel home, and I got a text on my phone saying you've got COVID, and I was like, oh great. And I also got a phone call from the doctor saying that Rose, my roommate, had COVID as well. So I was like, oh great. So like obviously we both had it. I don't know like how we got it or whatever, but we both went into Eugene without it and came out with it. So yeah, just at least for me, like it was it kind of showed that something was wrong, because I knew something was wrong, but it's hard to explain to people how you're feeling when you don't have an explanation. Like, everyone wants to know, why did you drop out of the World Champs? And obviously I don't just drop out of the World Champs for fun, but it's kind of like I couldn't explain it. And then as soon as that COVID test came back positive, I was like, oh, kind of a bit thankful, because I knew that I was, yeah, something was wrong. And I just had like the worst headache ever for, yeah, like 5 days. And then, yeah, like I said, I couldn't run because my chest was like so tight. That was probably the worst symptoms that I had. I didn't really have a cold or anything, so it wasn't like I was physically ill. But yeah, like we spoke about earlier, when you're trying to run at your best at the World Championships marathon, you need to be 100%, and I definitely wasn't 100%.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the thing I often talk about with people I coach is, you to be at your best for a marathon, you've got to be razor sharp physically and razor sharp psychologically. And we don't need to worry about that right now, but the physical side of it, it often is that people go into a race having had a bit of a cold in the lead up, or there's something going on, they underperform, and then you search for reasons, and there is almost always a physiological reason. There's almost always something that's happened, and it could be psychological as well, actually, but typically there's something physiological that's gone on that you don't necessarily always discover. Obviously, with testing now, with COVID, we discover it, right? Because we have to test. So for you, it's a relief. And so Natasha had the same with the Commonwealth Games, exactly the same thing. Didn't have COVID before the race, felt terrible in the race, tested positive after the race. So you get an explanation. And often that happens with people that get an explanation down the line, whatever that explanation might be, and you feel better about it. But it doesn't stop the pain of having to have dropped out of competing for your country in the World Championships and all the things that go with that, does it?
No, definitely not.
I mean, how do you feel when you drop out and you've got to the point where you know you can't continue anymore? Emotionally, how do you feel? Or how did you feel?
For me, I just knew I couldn't carry on running. Like, there was, I just couldn't finish the race. There was no, like, there's no way about like me thinking if I could carry on, because I knew I couldn't run for another hour. Obviously, it's different if you're running like a 10K, because it's 30 minutes of running, but the marathon being like over 2 hours, there was literally no way I could run for 2 hours. Like, I wouldn't have made it. So it wasn't a choice for me. I just knew as soon as I started running, I can't run for 2 hours. If it was a half marathon, I probably could have like jogged it in, because I was at 18K. So I would have, you know, I was running for my country, I would have jogged it in or tried to finish, but there's no way I can run for another hour. Like, it's just physically impossible. So
you're effectively owning that choice, right? As in, it's not really a choice. It's something that you have to do to protect yourself. And particularly with respiratory stuff, you've got to be careful, haven't you? Because you're putting pressure on your heart as a consequence of that. And where you go in the marathon anyway is a very deep place that takes time to recover from. So if you know you're off and you're trying to finish, it could set your recovery back weeks.
Yeah, I just, like I said, I just knew that I couldn't finish. So it wasn't really like I had a choice, because even at 5K, like I said, I knew something was off. So even for me, carrying on from 5 to 18K was like a massive struggle. My legs felt fine. But it was just like, that's obviously, I couldn't carry on. So it wasn't really like an emotional choice, because although I was really upset about it afterwards, I knew something was wrong. Like, I run every day, I know how I feel when I race, I know how I feel when I run, and I knew something was definitely wrong. I think when you know your body so well, like, I just knew that something was wrong. So I was okay about that decision. And then, like I said, when the COVID test came back positive, I was even more okay about it, because I knew that was the reason. But if I didn't have that COVID test, then I would have done like blood tests, because I knew something was wrong with me.
Because it's about, you know, you knowing yourself that there was something wrong, and almost in a position where you want to prove it to yourself that it's not just you, it's not your fault, if you will. You know, it's not you've not dropping out just because you feel a bit ropey, and, you know, it's not your day, because that happens. You know, we can have bad days, but we're still okay and we can still finish. But this was something different, and it's out of your control, basically.
Yeah.
So that on that basis, you feel okay about it, and especially when you get the positive result. But it doesn't stop you being upset. So in the kind of couple of weeks after that, I guess you spent a bit of time trying to recover as well.
Yeah.
To get over it. It's a respiratory illness. We all know that. It can be significant. It can take time to overcome it. So your natural default would be to go running, but presumably you didn't do that. How did you cope after the event with the disappointment and the fact that you couldn't run all? And what did you do?
So I obviously like took a few weeks to get over the COVID. And then once I felt better again, started back training. And I already was signed up to do London. So I had that as a like back focus in my mind. So it was kind of something to aim for. Just started planning towards that really, as if like, you know, I obviously had to take a couple of weeks off after being ill. So it was kind of like, if I'd have done the marathon, I would have done that anyway. So it's kind of back into normal routine. So I just tried to forget about it and move on.
Like, yeah. So managing the disappointment was that, forgetting about it and moving on,
pretty much on to the next
thing.
There's nothing else I could have done. Like, I couldn't go back and change it. I don't know how I got COVID. Like, you never know how you got ill. It's obviously very annoying, but I can't blame anyone. Like,
and there's nothing you could have done because you had to stay in the accommodation, didn't you? So you couldn't have stayed outside and you couldn't have managed yourself.
No, literally nothing. And also, I could have got it on the plane. Like, even if I was allowed to stay like in my own hotel, for example, like that doesn't mean I wouldn't have got COVID, because I could have got it on the plane, at the airport, anywhere. And it's actually my first time picking up the whole pandemic, so it was very bad timing. But it's just one of those things. So I just tried to like crack on with the London Marathon plan really, and just get back into it.
So talking about London, so you've always had that disappointment, you've managed, you're back into training, starting to feel good again. Think about that time. So that's, we're now into August, I guess, and then you've done a couple of half marathons. You did the Great North Run and the Big Half, didn't you?
Yeah.
Without tapering, I think, and run 17 minutes. Is that right?
Yeah, 70 for both. Yeah.
Yeah. So London, getting excited. You love London. It's where you run your best. It's your fastest times. You obviously love the crowds. What's next? What happened?
Got to the hotel on Friday. Felt good. Obviously did press conference on Wednesday. Everything was fine. And then, just after dinner on Friday, I just said to Adam, I don't feel great. And he was like, just go to bed early, you'll be fine in the morning. So I went to bed at like 8 p.m. Which obviously I never go to bed at 8. So I was like, oh, just maybe a bit tired, you know, all the press stuff. And so I went to bed, and then I woke up at 4 a.m. just like throwing up everywhere, like
nice
terrible. So we ended up phoning the doctor, and then literally from that point onwards I didn't move for 3 days and was sick a lot of times.
Nice.
Obviously missed the race. I couldn't even get out of bed. There was like 0% chance I could have made any start.
So that was Saturday morning. So you had all day Saturday to try and convince yourself you were going to be okay.
Oh, there was no way. Like, even from like between 4 a.m. and 7 a.m. on Saturday morning, I was so sick. There was no way, even if at 7 a.m. on Saturday I made a miraculous recovery, there was no way I could have run a marathon, because honestly, the amount of sickness that I felt and was like, I couldn't even move, let alone eat or drink. So obviously you're meant to be carb loading the last 24 hours before, and I had nothing in me, and like, I couldn't even get out of bed. So from Saturday to Monday, I was just completely out of it. I don't even remember.
Stuck in the Tailbridge Hotel.
Yeah, we weren't in that hotel. We were actually in Windsor, so I wasn't too far away from my house. So my mom came to pick me up. Then I just transferred to my bed for a few days. But like I said, I didn't even get out of bed, nothing. So it wasn't even like I couldn't watch the race. I didn't even look at my phone. I couldn't really even, it was like 3 days passed and nothing, they just passed. I don't even know what happened. I was pretty ill. So I couldn't even be sad about the race, because it was almost like it was such a blur. Like, it happened so fast. I went from being like in the best shape ever, ready to race, to like so ill, you can't even get out of bed. And then the London Marathon happened and I'm like, what? It happened? now I look back and I'm like, that was very odd.
Yeah, that is odd. So you, and also to be in the best shape ever, I always say life is about timing, and your timing this year, apart from Boston, couldn't have been worse, because you get COVID immediately before the World Championships, and then you get a sickness bug immediately before London when you're in great shape.
Yeah, literally, like, well, my auntie always tells me everything happens for a reason. So like, obviously there must have been some reason I was not meant to run London Marathon this year either. But I just look back, I don't look back and laugh, but I look back and I'm like, I just don't understand. Yeah, like, it's very It's obviously a very bad timing, and I just couldn't have done anything again. Like, there's nothing I could have done. I went to the hotel. My preparation was like perfect. My training was perfect. Like, just Friday night, I don't know what happened, but it's like someone flicked a switch and then I was completely ill.
I'm picturing your next marathon. You're going to be turning up to wherever you need to be in like a full hazmat suit. Oh,
I know.
Not like, touching literally. Anything or anyone.
That's what my dad said, but I don't feel like that's the way to go because, I mean, the only thing I can think is that my immune system is going to be so good after this year because I've had like, I even got flu after Boston. Obviously, I had to pull out a Vitality 10K. And I was pretty ill then as well. So I think like I've had every single illness that you could have this year. So my immune system is going to be boosted for next year. So, I mean, I'm hoping that's the case anyway.
Do you think there's a relationship between the fact that you've been training well, training hard, and your immune system potentially being slightly depleted as a consequence of that, that means you're more vulnerable to getting illness at that point in the cycle? Or do you think it's just coincidence and luck and bad luck?
I think a bit of both. I do think when you're training so hard, like everything's on the edge, like you're on the edge of like injury, probably you're on the edge of illness. And like, you obviously, like I push myself so hard in training, that when I get to the race, I'm like ready to go. I couldn't have done any more training. So I know like I'm 100% all in. It just takes something so small for you to pick up a small illness that might not affect someone else. But for me, it's like obviously 6 days of sickness because, yeah, like your body's so on edge, ready to go. So obviously I do, but there's nothing you can really do about that, I guess, because you can't tell if you're going to pick up an illness like from a door handle or something. It's just like impossible to tell. It's just, I think, a bit of bad luck and timing, really. It's all I've done to.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously we are vulnerable in those times just before races, but absolutely, you can't control everything. So there is bits of it that are going to get you, and you know, you've controlled what you can with your training. You're just not able to control your condition on the day. And like I said earlier, there's always something that leads to underperformance, or in your case, not being able to get out of bed for 3 days. So that was disappointing too, right?
Yeah, very.
And it's been a month-ish since London. And what have you been doing since then?
Just trying to feel normal again, really. Like I said, obviously getting over a disappointment and also just the illness. It took a lot out of me. So I just needed to, get back to feeling like myself, like a normal human before I started back training again, because I didn't even feel like a person for a few days. I don't know what I thought. That was the end. Honestly, I don't think I've been so sick ever. So like, I just needed to get back to feeling like a normal person, and then I could think about running again. I feel pretty good again now, so I'm glad.
Good. So you took some time off, and you're starting to run nice and easy to start with, and hoping to pick up into sessions. And to what extent have you started planning the future?
So I've been back in doing sessions this week. To be honest, there's like not really a rush for me to get. I've obviously done two marathon build-ups this year that haven't gone well without a race, so I know that they're in the bank, which is pretty good feeling, because it's always good to have good training banks without any injuries. So at least that's one thing. Like, I haven't had any time off this year from injury, so that's still like a positive that I've been able to improve in training. So I know that like next time I do a marathon build up, I'm already at a better level from those two build up. So I'm not too sad about that, because it's not wasted. But obviously I haven't got the race to prove it. But yeah, for planning, my coach has kind of just like left me for a few weeks, because he knew like obviously I wasn't 100%. He just told me to contact him when I'm ready to like train properly again. So we spoke earlier this week and he set me a few sessions. But in terms of races, I don't have a firm plan yet, because like I said, he just wanted me to get back to feeling normal again.
Yeah. And how do you feel about that? Because you are driven from cycle to cycle, and there's world championships next year as well, and the following year there's the Olympics, and your life is punctuated by these big events and the timings of them. So not having something to really focus on and think about, does that lead to confusion for you, or are you comfortable with that given that you've been ill?
I think because I've had two disappointments this year, and like my big aim after the world champs was London, didn't really have another like big focus. So I'm kind of okay with it because it's not like I don't feel like I'm missing out because I didn't have anything for this year. Obviously, I have goals for next year, but they're still goals for next year. So I don't feel like I need to rush to put anything in place to make up for what I've already lost. Because like I said before, the big positive for me is the two marathons. I can look back at the two build-ups and I know that I've improved so much. Like even if I compare it to before I got my PB, my sessions were so much better and I've improved. So I know that that's like in the bank and you don't just lose that from having a week off from being ill. So
yeah,
I know next time I do my marathon build up, I've already got that like ready. So I feel a bit content that, yeah, now that I feel better, I can plan, but I don't need to like squeeze something in just to make up for.
Exactly. You don't need to go into kind of redemption mode of trying to prove anything. And also you're talking about the two bad races or the two races that never really happened for you in the two training blocks. We had a third one, which was for Boston, which did go really well. That wasn't so long ago. We joked earlier that it felt like a lifetime ago because so much has happened since then. But actually, that was only 6 months ago. And you've got that as well. And a 2:25 at Boston, as we know, is probably worth more than that at on a flat course.
Yeah. And also, like before Boston, I obviously did the New York half that went pretty well. I was sixth there. And I paced Nagoya Women's Marathon to 30K at 2:20 marathon pace. And I felt pretty good doing that. And then I raced in Australia in the 10K and came second. So I did have some good races this year. Obviously, even like the Great North Run and the big half, I was like going into those half marathons, I was running like 100 plus mile a week. So I know that like running 70 minutes on real tired legs, like that was a step forward because I wouldn't have been able to do that 2 years ago. And obviously they were back to back as well, like one weekend after another. So I think like I have raced a lot this year, more than I ever have. And I think I've also not been injured. I'm touching wood, but yeah. I usually pick up like an injury or a niggle and I have literally had zero of them this year. So that's another bonus. Like I know I have been ill, so it's something else that stopped me from running. But yeah, like I said before, I've got to take the positives.
Yeah. And I would call that reframing. So you can go look at the negative picture and go, oh, it's miserable. I've messed up two races with things that were outside my control. How unfair is that? Or you can go exactly what you've done, which is reframing it to, I've got two training blocks where I haven't had to do the arduous bit, which is the race, which takes ages to recover from and risks injury. So you haven't had to do that. And those two blocks are in the bank and you know how good you are now. So next time you can either go harder or at least get to where you were pre-London again.
Yeah.
And get yourself going. And that reframing is something that I think is really important and it's about adaptation, really. It's adapting your mindset to the adversity. So, and that's what resilience is. It's not just coming back from disappointment. It is actually, no, how do I reframe my mindset to know that there's some positive to take from a difficult situation that I'm going to use again in the future, which it sounds like you're going to do.
Yeah, definitely.
Good work.
Thanks.
I like it. Because the reason that's so important, I think, for you and anyone in your position, i.e. an elite athlete, is that it would be easy to get beaten up by it, but especially around the marathon, because it is so hard to nail a marathon and you get so few opportunities to do it.
Yeah.
When you have a series of disappointments, it'd be easy to throw the towel in and just go, this is just too hard. I train relentlessly. I dedicate my life to my training and my racing, and then not to have the opportunity to prove your quality as an athlete in a world championship race and then the London Marathon, which is obviously highly visible, is a real disappointment. So to be able to come through that, I think is brilliant.
Hopefully coming through that. Yeah, I feel like obviously did have a few days where I was like, this is just terrible and I don't feel like I said before, when I look back, I think I couldn't, like literally couldn't have done anything different. So I can't be mad about it, because what could I have done? It's not like I went to a party and picked up COVID the day before the world champs. And it's not like I ate a dodgy curry the night before the marathon. Like there's literally nothing I could have done differently. So I'm like content because, well, not, I'm not content. Obviously I didn't race, but I'm content with my like training and how everything went, and I couldn't have done anything different. So that does make it a little bit easier to accept, I guess. It's just like I said, bad luck and very bad timing.
Yeah, and an example of how hard it is to be an elite marathoner.
Yeah,
because to the outside world, obviously, you know yourself well, but you to the outside world, it would look like oh, Charlotte's not done London, she's not done the World Championships, where's she gone? And go, well, hang on a minute, she ran 2:25 at Boston in April, 2:23 in London a year ago. She hasn't gone anywhere. She's just had two bits of bad luck.
Yeah, and I think it is obviously like highlighted when it's your job and that's
exactly
like what you do and stuff. But yeah, even if I'd have just done Boston this year and then not done anything for the rest of the year, I still would have been happy with the year. So the fact that I did try and do two other marathons, like, and obviously they didn't go well, but like I said, like Boston did go well, and even if I couldn't have done another marathon this year, I still would have been happy with how this year has gone, and last year definitely. And even like the first half of 2021 I didn't race because I was coming back from niggles and like illness and stuff then. So like the second half of 2021 was really good, but the first half was terrible. So this year I've just kind of like flipped it around.
Yeah,
it's just hard, like when it's your job and it's like day in, day out, you're pushing your body to the limit. Yeah, it's just hard balance, I guess.
It's a hard job, I would say.
It's a very hard job, yeah.
Marathon running is hard anyway.
It's fun, but it's a very hard job.
Yeah, but to make it your job, right? Yeah, okay, good luck. But thank you. I really appreciate your sharing so much there. I know that some of that's quite difficult. You seem to be in a much better place now. Maybe we shouldn't have done this 2 or 3 weeks ago. You perhaps weren't in such a good place physically or emotionally, but I'm glad you are, and good luck with getting back into training.
Thanks.
So what I think you get a sense of there is how hard it is when you make being a marathoner your job. But I also think you get a sense of the importance of positivity as you go about that job. There is no doubt that through that period, particularly immediately post the World Championships and the London Marathon, that things were difficult for Charlotte. She could be easily forgiven for going into dark places. Sounds like physically she was in quite a dark place, but mentally really, and putting all those hours in, all that effort, the travel, and it all effectively comes to nothing, certainly as the viewing public, the spectators, and as your participation in the competition is concerned. But positivity is important because we expect it in social media. We expect people to shine a light on us all and inspire us all, people like Charlotte in particular. And social media is important for athletes like Charlotte because of the role of sponsors. And they don't want to be associated with negativity either. So that poses an interesting challenge. It's also important to be honest for selectors so they can be clear about why things didn't work out, because they will form opinions, make judgments for future events. So it's a really difficult balance to strike. But it's actually much more than that. Positivity is a necessity for performance, for actually doing the job. The reframing that I talk about in the episode is a necessity. And you've got to be able to be positive to get out the door, to crack on with the training. And it's hard. Long weeks, lots of hours of training, and to keep going block after block after block, year after year after year. You have to be positive. Because what's the alternative? Well, the only alternative is negativity. And that's just corrosive. Just brings you down. Brings other people down, but brings you down. So the reframing that I spoke of is essential. And you could argue that a lot of that is post-rationalisation. It's looking back and going, well, things happen for a reason, and this is the reason, and there's nothing I could have done about it. All the things that Charlotte was saying, really. And you could argue that is post-rationalising how you actually felt at the time. I would call it reframing. And I would call it the cornerstone of resilience. And resilience is the subject of a recovery ramble, episode number 71. And in that, when I talk about resilience, it's not about the bouncing back from adversity. That might be the outcome of resilience, but it's not. That's not what resilience is. Resilience is adapting to new circumstances. In Charlotte's case, the lack of racing. Certainly the marathon racing. It might be adjusting your goals, whether they're time-based goals or events you want to do, adjusting them in the face of change is how you stay on track, it's how you stay motivated, how you stay positive, how you stay energetic around your craft. And then of course, resilience is about adjusting how you feel, recognising that feelings can be changed, they can be overridden. It's not easy, but we can adjust how we feel. And it's important, I think in Charlotte's case, that she does and has. And looks forward and thinks, I had two brilliant training blocks, had two brilliant races before that in London last autumn and Boston in the spring. Next time I'm ready to go, I'm going to fly. No niggles, no injuries. I'm ready. And of course that's what she's done, and that's what makes her particularly strong. And why I think we can be confident that two bad races through circumstances out of her control don't make her a bad athlete. Quite the reverse. The resilience and the training has gone into it will make her an even better one. So bring on 2023. There's no doubt in my mind that she'll be back faster and fitter. So that's enough from me this time. The fourth part of our four-part mini-series, which therefore equals the final part, is with Tish Jones. And Tish has really suffered across the course of the last 3 years since her qualification for the World Championship Marathon in Doha in 2019 in Qatar. Timely and relevant, of course, that with the World Cup being there right now. But we'll hear a little bit from her about how she's getting on. But in the meantime, I hope you have enjoyed this episode. And if you haven't, I hope it's helped you get some sleep. I look forward to speaking to you soon, and please take care.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.